What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Mongols River Hounds show. I'm Mike, with me is Kev and Josh. Coming up on today's show, we'll recap the Hounds 4-1 win over Wilmington, the 1-1 draw at Harrisburg, and we'll talk about a little bit about their upcoming game against OCB. Let's go!
Can you believe that, guys?
No, I mean, that is the craziest sequence of events we've seen in quite a period of time.
In the top right corner, gentlemen, out to the middle, back to
So, yeah, we have two games to talk about here. The first one, really good. And the second one, I want to say, really bad. But I don't, in hindsight, in retrospective, we got 4 points out of two games, which I don't think we've done consistently at all this season. So, you know, we didn't win the Keystone Cup.
Boo.
That didn't happen. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Is there anything you guys want to say before we just jump right into the Wilmington game?
I know. I feel like you kind of limped into this one, Mike.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I really apologize.
There's some. I'll try to be positive in whatever way I can. I mean, like, look. I mean, Richard kind of called it. I didn't really see the Wilmington result coming. That's obviously a positive, regardless of. I don't know. I'm trying to, like, even before we even get to the second game. I don't know, do you guys just want to jump into the Wilmington game?
Is there any conversation you guys want to talk about right now?
No, let's do Wilmington. Yeah. So, for the second time in a row playing Wilmington, the Hounds walked away with a 4-1 win. I think somebody online asked, can we just play Wilmington every week? Because I don't know what it is about this team that we come out for. You know, we had goals from Herzog in the 6th minute, Hunt in the 39th off of Earl's corner. Nick Thompson got in on the scoring action when it was sort of kind of a flub. He sort of shot it off somebody and it trickled in, but it went in.
It's probably one of the only ways he's going to score this season.
I'll say every goal counts, guys. Come on.
And then, you know, the crazy goal at the end, which, you know, the Hounds were awarded a PK with 2 minutes left in stoppage time, already up 3-1. Kerr took the PK. It hit the crossbar. The ref whistled for I don't know what. We're thinking maybe encroachment. And Herzog ran over, picked up the ball, and it was funny because Aguilar, you could tell, was sort of pleading, for, like, let me get my first goal. Come on. And Herzog just sort of waved his finger like, no, no, no. And he lined up and scored a second in the game.
Okay, is that what happened? Because I was watching it live. I was not watching the presentation, like, with the announcers. But from the field, like, when we were watching the game live, it looks like they took the penalty and he missed, and then a penalty happened in the box after the miss. Like, game kept on going. A penalty happened. They whistled again and gave us another penalty because of whatever happened after the penalty kick. So it was almost like, you know, a second chance. It's like, oh, Kerr missed it, crap. And then suddenly there's another penalty in the box. He's blowing the whistle again. It's like, oh, never mind. We get to try this again. And then Herzog puts it away.
Yeah, I don't know. They theorized encroachment, but I didn't actually see on the broadcast what happened.
Yeah, because it didn't look like the play stopped after the penalty kick. It looked like it actually kept on going.
Yeah. So, yeah, the Hounds win 4-1. In terms of takeaways, what do you guys any thoughts on this game?
I got a couple. I'll start negative and finish positive. What I'm pretty sure, if I'm remembering correctly, Melodo played in the middle alongside Earls in somewhat of a 4-4-1-1. And I think, the two central midfielders was Melodo and Earls. I think in the first 15 minutes, Melodo gives it up like 3 times. I wanted him to really kind of kick on the season. I haven't really seen, I don't know. For me, he hasn't had a great game thus far this season, and this I think this game in particular, it was pretty poor. I don't know if it's just maybe not his position. I mean, because if I'm remembering correctly, he hasn't really played in the center of a 4-4-2 before. I don't know if he was just kind of uncomfortable in that, but I think he was just trying too much. I don't know, too many kind of flair type passes, and they just didn't come off. And he wasn't solid enough defensively. He didn't give enough going forward. I was pretty disappointed with his performance. On the flip side, I thought this was the game that I really kind of sat back after it and said, like, and said to myself, you know what, Herzog is really coming into his own. I thought Herzog had a really good game, and he has those performances where he'll be head and shoulders above every other player on the pitch, but the next step for him to take is to do that week in, week out, and he's starting to do that. And so I think Herzog could be a special player for us, I think, moving forward. Same thing with Campbell. I thought Campbell just, I don't know if I'm biased towards him, but I think he just looks superior to a lot of other people. It might have been the fact that we were playing Wilmington, who really didn't offer anything.
That was my question about Herzog. I mean, is he coming to his own, or are we playing the weaker side of the table right now?
Yeah, it could be.
You know, couple games in a row where we're getting kind of the easier matches for us this season. But no, I mean, even if it is, I mean, you can only play the team that's in front of you. Herzog's showing up, and he's putting the goals away, which is great. I do think he is, you know, getting at least more confidence and does seem to be gelling better with the team as a whole.
He's not making stupid mistakes either. Like Maloto giving it away three times in the first 15 minutes. Like, I don't really see Herzog doing that much. And he's always putting himself about. He's always looking to...
It seems like he's playing almost a different position. Like, he's playing a different style now than what he was playing the beginning of the season. And it's really kind of playing on his strengths more so than what he was like, or how he was playing before.
At this point, I mean, you consider there was a bit of a drought early in the season where a lot of people were questioning, you know, is he the solution? We don't think he's the solution. He hasn't scored. He's now within four goals of the Golden Boot race. He has 11, and the leader right now is 15.
It's crazy.
So I don't know if he'll actually catch him, but the leader right now is Jack McBean out at LA2. But, yeah. You know, good on him. I totally agree.
It's 11 goals, you said? I think it's 11.
He has 11.
And we've played 25 games. I mean, so that's approaching 1-2, which is a great hit rate for a striker.
Yeah, double digits is double digits.
Like, there for the first couple of games with Romeo Parks, he was kind of second fiddle to Romeo as far as, like, who was supposed to be the person taking the goals. So, if you keep that in mind, too, the fact that he kind of got a late start anyway because of Romeo. So,
yeah. Yeah, definitely sort of the MVP here of our second half. I thought one of the things that we did a good job of in this game that, again, like, we'll see it and then it'll go away, is we really did a decent job of taking our time with possession, where the number of times that we were stringing it together, 12, 14 passes, and just taking our time, and that was leading to opening up space on the field and leading to runs into the box. And we didn't always connect on those runs, but being patient and not just lobbing the ball over the top, you know, gave us a chance. And I think that's where a lot of the opportunities came from.
I think the first goal comes out of that. I mean, Herzog shows a lot of composure at the edge of the box, where he just kind of puts his foot on it for a second when he has a lot of players around him. And usually you would see a player kind of rush that, try to do something where they get it out of his feet. And, he showed a lot of composure for that first goal. And once again, like Josh was mentioning, I don't know if this is because it's Wilmington, but at the very least, it's a positive sign.
And speaking of Wilmington, so the first time we played Wilmington away and we got that great score line, a lot of people suggested, I think even we did, that if they would have been fully staffed, Wilmington, because they had a couple people...
They were missing their two center backs.
Exactly. Yeah. And then, they seemed like they'd be missing a lot of key players for them. We were wondering, could we actually do that if they weren't missing those people? And I don't think they were missing them this time around. And so...
No, they had... Yeah.
That answers that question. Now, the only question is, how much low spirits were there at Wilmington? Because it just got announced for sure that they are going down to the PDA... Or no, that their franchise is moving out of Wilmington after the season. I believe it's Baltimore is taking the franchise. So, yeesh.
Yeah, but no, they had both Peroni and Ashani Fairclaw, who were all not only their center backs, but their leading scorers. Fairclaw was the one who ended up getting the goal for them in the game against us here. But, yeah.
Yes, Kev. I mean, that just as a side note, I mean, that's... You never want to see a club do that, and you kind of feel bad for all the Wilmington fans. And all
I come from Ohio, you know, the Browns, Baltimore. I mean, I kind of felt really bad for them.
Yeah.
I was still super happy to see them go down 4-1.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah. Obviously.
Yeah, at this point, Wilmington is currently 6 points out of a playoff spot, 6 points that we took from them. So we're sorry, or you're welcome. I mean, I don't know how you want to look at that.
Yeah, but we're still tied for the bottom of the table right now.
Yeah.
Are we tied?
Yeah.
Well,
I think we're ahead on goal differential, maybe.
No, we're both at negative 16 goal differential, I believe.
Oh, my God.
So we're just alphabetically ahead of them? Is that what
you're
saying?
Yeah, alphabetically, I believe we're ahead of them, which... Actually, so no, that makes no sense. How is it? Because they're FC Montreal. Why are we?
Josh, don't question it. Just let it happen. Don't question it.
All right,
it.
I don't know. I don't know what crazy math they're doing to make us look like we're ahead of FC Montreal, but whatever.
I guess the only other takeaway that I had here was I thought that in the past I've sort of questioned some of the additions that we've gotten from Columbus, aside from Stefan and Hollingsworth, but I thought Martinez put in a really good shift in this game. They originally announced that we were lining up in a 4-3-3, which as soon as we lined up that way, it broke down and it wasn't quite that. But he has sort of this speed off that right side that we hadn't had previously. And I thought he did a good job, at least in the Wilmington game.
I thought he was fine. Yeah, he didn't sparkle for me, but he was fine.
I do have one question, though. Okay, so about this game as a whole, we're really far ahead. We're doing great. Why did we not put Chevy in, the new guy that we signed, Siobhan Walsh? Why did we not put him in? We had the substitutions. Is there any reason?
Well, in the 68th minute, we put Aguilar in for Nick Thompson. And I thought at that moment, it's put Walsh in. We were up 3-0 at that point. Like, there's nothing to lose. Give him run and let him get used to things. I mean, this was exactly what we said we wanted to see happen with Aguilar when he came in right away and started like 3 days after getting in. We said, you know, sit him on the bench, let him watch the first two thirds, and then you put him in and let him run around.
And especially since we had such a comfortable lead, it's not like you're holding on to the lead. You need to actually keep focused. It's like, no, we're doing pretty good. If there's any time to put this guy in and see what he can do in front of the home fans, you know, in front of a crowd, it's this moment. Especially if you plan on playing him for Harrisburg, you kind of want to get him some game time in front of a crowd before the Harrisburg game, I would have thought. And
well, that's the funny thing is what Aguilar wasn't even in the lineup for the Harrisburg game, right?
He was on the bench.
Yeah,
I didn't even think he was on the bench, but I guess okay. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I think there's still some questionable team management that's going on in terms of players going in and out. I think the other one that a lot of people were screaming about was leaving Earls in as long as we did in the Wilmington game because.
Yeah.
He was already, what, one yellow card away from having to sit out the Harrisburg game due to yellow card accumulation. And knowing the way that Earls likes to play, it's like, we're up 3-0, just take him out. Like, don't risk losing him for that game, which...
Didn't he get a yellow at the beginning of the game, if I remember right? Didn't he... During that game, he got a yellow, I thought. I could be wrong, though.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I don't have it in my notes.
Because I remember thinking, like, as soon as that happened, I'm like, oh, crap, he needs to be here for...
Get him out, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but overall, you know, I think it was a good performance. It's something that I wish that we saw
more often,
more frequently this season. Yeah,
I think Cav, you look the like... only other interesting thing for me was, you know, I already mentioned Melotto playing in the middle alongside Earls. I thought Kerr had a quiet game out on the left. You know,
Are you letting that train pull away from you again?
No, I'm just saying, it's taken a long time for me to come around to Kerr, and I do believe he's at least technically one of our best players, and probably overall he's one of our best players. And if that's the case, you want to see him get on the ball more than he does. Not only wasn't he in the middle of the pitch, but it also seemed like we were kind of overloading the right side. Anytime we'd get the ball, we'd like to go on the right side. And so because of that, Kerr, I feel like for the first 25 minutes, he was just completely anonymous in the game. Maybe had one or two touches, which shouldn't be the case with a player of his kind of caliber. So I don't know. I thought it was interesting, A, that he plays out on the left, and B, Melotto was in the center, maybe instead of Kerr. I don't know. What are you guys' thoughts on that? Do you think it's an okay position for him to stay out left, out wide? Because he can get maybe a little more space out there, which is maybe the argument for it. But especially maybe in the context of Melotto being in the center, what do you guys think about Kerr playing out on left mid?
I mean, I think we talked about coming into this season that one of his best attributes is coming late. And he always, last season, he was sort of the sneaky outside midfielder that people would lose track of, where you'd have the ball on one side and you'd sort of be passing around a little bit, and all of a sudden you send a long cross and you spring Kerr and he's gone. And that just hasn't been the case this year. The other scenario that we talked about was there were a few games toward the end of last season where he was played in that holding position where Melotto was. And what that did was, as long as you had Earls there, it freed him up to sort of roam between the lines and, again, be that sort of sneaky player that pops up in random places. I think when you start having to rely on him as, like, the crux of the team, that's where you get into problems. He's much better as that, you know, sneaky player that you're losing track of that's out on, you know, the peripheral that just pops up in random places and gets the ball and goes. And so whether or not he can do that on the left side, or whether or not the secret's out on him, I don't know. Or whether or not he has to pinch in even just a little bit just to get the ball. And he's not getting the ball, so he's either just staying out wide, hoping somebody gets it to him, or getting frustrated and getting drawn inside. I mean, Josh, what's your take on Kerr so far?
I mean, I pretty much disagree with what you just said. I don't really think he should be the crux of the team as far as everything flowing through him. He does much better if he is the one on, you know, the periphery that you just don't see coming, and he sneaks that header in or he sneaks that goal in.
Yeah,
it's almost, I don't know, I wonder, obviously he's not replicating the season he had last season, but very few Riverhounds players are. You wonder if, echoing what both of you guys said, you're probably in a bad position if he's your best player. Like, you don't, and I don't mean that as a knock in his capability. I mean that in the sense of he needs to kind of have other players to feed off of in order to play his best game. And I think, you know, obviously with Vincent there, that's an obvious, yeah, Kerr feeds off that beautifully. And I think without a recognized, quote-unquote, best player at the club, a player like him might suffer because of that.
Fair enough.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, I think we talked about this game enough. We typically go through and break down every goal and talk about it in detail, but we won 4-1. So, you know, there's not a lot to dive into outside of what we've already talked about. Let's
to this point, what it's looking at this game plus the two games previously, what that technically that's 6 points in three games. I mean, that's, it's not a bad rate, guys.
This season, it's a fantastic
rate. Yeah. So, and then even with the tie in the next game, that's 7 points in four games. It's not terrible. So,
yeah. So let's talk about the City Islanders game. So going into this, it was the third game of the Keystone Derby. Basically, the Hounds had to walk away with at least a one-goal win. And there were some people theorizing online, you know, what happens if it was just a one-goal win? Do we just retain it because we already have it? I don't know if there was ever a tiebreaker that was specified.
There was rumors about it would be you're standing in the table. And obviously, we're all like, no. Shenanigans, no.
Yeah. But regardless, the Hounds didn't do enough to get the win. It was a 1-1 draw. Josh, you know, you were on the bus. You guys were there early. Talk us through all of that before we even talk about the game. What was the experience like?
We saw some cool pictures, that's for sure.
Yeah,
what sort of shenanigans you guys get into, all that?
It was the nicest bus we have ever had. I don't know. Nice. I forget the name of the company that we used, but the bus itself was brand new. I think he said, like, we're, like, one of the first groups to use the bus. So already I was a little apprehensive.
Did you say, I'm sorry?
Yeah, exactly. Like, what? We're the okay. I did hear one cooler fall on the way home. Just hear like cooler, and I hear ice just go over the place. I'm like, yeah, but no, it was just ice. It's fine. The bus driver's super awesome. He even put up with us singing 99 bottles of beer on the wall from 99 down to -99.
Ooh,
on
wow.
The way back. After we were done, anyone sane would have been like, shut up. And he was just like, one more time. And everyone's like,
they'd be
no,
that
we're
parent
done.
That's like reaching back, smacking you.
Yeah, instead he was just like, in another round or something like that. It's like, nope, we're done.
That's funny.
So yeah, as normal, it was shenanigans, fun times. We hung out at a local bar beforehand and after. Unfortunately, Nightingale was not able to join us. I don't know if you heard about that. He had some flight issues. So we are sad not to have him there. But still a good time. We saw a lot of people that we usually don't get to see because they come to like the away games because they live closer now. So that was fun. But yeah, other than the fact that, you know, we didn't get to bring the cup back with us like last time, it was a good trip. It's weird to watch a game in a baseball stadium. I don't know if you've ever experienced that before, but the sight angles, like the sight lines and everything like that, it was just...
The camera angles weren't that much better.
No, I actually watched this game afterwards because it's so hard to like... It was hard to see everything from where we were sitting behind the home plate. so yeah, it was interesting. They did have a good crowd there. I think it was because of fireworks night, but it still, I know exactly how that is. We've had that in Pittsburgh before. So yeah, the fans were, we've seen it before, and you know, you've seen it on different feeds. They were sitting on their hands. It is what it is, but they did cheer once the goal happened, so that was nice of them.
As you'd hope, yeah.
but overall, I mean, it's always a fun trip. It's the rivalry. Yeah.
But I just want to, like, not congratulate you, praise you and the entire Steel Army, because I really think, I mean, that's, for me, that's what supporting a team should all be about. I mean, to hear about you guys... You know, your community, your friendship, all you guys kind of piling on the bus, going to have a good time, having a drink, and checking out some other places and going to watch your team. I think that's, if everyone else kind of took that as an example, I think the soccer culture in America, it's on a good track, but I think it would just be great to see more of that.
We actually recruited some fans at the stadium. There was a couple of kids that were just having fun watching us, and they came over and kind of just joined us.
That's awesome.
So, of course, we started to chant, "We steal your fans, we steal your fans." How boring must you be? We steal your fans.
the announcers, you know, made a point of saying on the broadcast that, you know, it seemed like every 10 minutes they're like, "Man, these guys are still going. They're still drumming." It's like, yep, that's what they do.
That was nice of them, but it was not nice of them to, one, call us Steeler fans. Yes. Like, the Steeler fans came in today. It's like, no, Riverhounds fans. That's why we're here.
And they did, you know, the obligatory, they must have stopped at Permane Brothers before they came over. Like,
oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
and what made it even worse is they said, what was it? If you notice, they're wearing yellow, unlike their team. And they had no clue that the team has a yellow kit at all. There's like, for some reason, the Riverhounds don't wear yellow. It's like, but they do.
They were like, every team in Pittsburgh wears black and gold, except for the Riverhounds. And the one guy was like, maybe it has to do with their place in the standings. They don't let them. And I'm like, you guys do zero research.
To be fair, that was kind of funny.
I couldn't help myself after watching the game and going back through it again. I put out a tweet just apologizing to City Islanders fans for having broadcasters that are so terrible. every time Herzog touched the ball, they said it was Kevin Kerr, and it, literally, you could tell they did zero homework on the Hounds other than looking at the stat sheet. That was it.
Yeah. They didn't say a single sub that came on.
Nope.
Like, they weren't aware of them at all.
Nope. So we talked about the bus trip. We talked about the announcers and how terrible they were. And Kevin, you mentioned that the camera angles were just putrid. Harrisburg needs to up their game there. But so we got the draw. I mentioned, you know, at the beginning that it was 4 points out of two games, which any other time during the season we would take. You guys may disagree. I thought the Hounds played relatively well. I mean, aside from the mental errors of, you know, the back pass that Kerr made that led to their goal and Earl's red card, which I'm sure we're going to talk about in a minute.
Yeah.
I thought we sort of continued what we were doing with Wilmington, where we were patient, we maintained possession, we created chances. You know, the first few minutes, it was like all Hounds. And it felt like one was just, you know, bound to come. And I don't know. I mean, did you guys see the same thing, or were you thinking differently?
So the first half, I did think it looked good for us. I felt like we were doing really good. I don't know what the possession breakdown was. I haven't seen the stats for that, but I did feel like we had the majority of the ball, and it seems like we had it. It always fell apart near the last third. Like it never felt like we had that many chances on goal, but we did keep possession, and we did seem to be the more attacking team out of the two. But then the second half, I don't know. You could feel the momentum draining out of the game in that second half, and especially once they get their goal, Harrisburg. It, from there on, it was an uphill battle, and they came back, got the goal, and it started to go back in our favor. It felt like we were on the attack again, and then the red card happened, and that was the end of that.
Yeah. So the red card that we keep alluding to, basically, I'm looking at the timing of it here. It was fairly late in the game, 72nd minute.
Yeah, it felt like 75 or something.
Yeah, it was 72nd minute. At that point, the game was 1-1, and the Hounds were sort of surging, Josh, like you said. You know, you could feel the momentum changing, and Danny Earls went in for a dangerous two-footed tackle, wasn't really anywhere near the ball.
Can we just call that a Danny Earls? For a Danny Earls?
I think we should dub that, you know, from now on. No matter what happens, no matter where Danny Earls plays, a two-footed tackle away from the ball is now called a Danny Earls.
Well, the weird thing was it wasn't even like...
needed.
Yeah, it wasn't like the ball was out of the guy's feet. It was like they were. I forget who. I think there was a Riverhounds player that kind of. They were in kind of a challenge. They were kind of both on the ground, and the ball, like a quarter of the ball, comes out from underneath this guy's like abdomen. And Danny Rose is like, "I'm going in," and he just
dibs,
and he just like two footed just right in there, and it's like. Jeez, man. Like,
well, and to make matters worse, he then got up and was basically in the ref's face. He actually had his hands on the ref and had to be restrained and taken away. And in a game like this where you're playing for the fans at this point, to see him lose his cool like that when we still had there were 15 minutes plus stoppage time left and we were surging. I mean, we get one goal and all of a sudden now it's the discussion of, well, what is the tiebreaker? And two goals makes it ours. And it seemed like single-handedly that decision just sort of took a lot of the wind out of our sails, and it was thanks. But
and at that point, Walsh was on, right? He got on around the 64th minute or something like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, that was an opportunity for him as well, and it felt like, you know, we could see what was going to happen with him and what potential he had. But then when you take away a player off the field, it's almost like you don't actually get to see Walsh be Walsh at that point. He has to play a whole different game because you're down a man. So it really took away from that moment. And, you know, as soon as he made that decision and he screwed up, he felt bad. He looked, you know, dejected. Personally, when he was walking out the field, but just he lost his cool, and I don't know. I just feel like that is the story of the season for him. It just every opportunity he needs to, you know, chill.
And yeah, it's
make the smart decisions.
It's a weird one because obviously, as a fan, you like seeing your players show passion, and obviously, you know. His challenges aren't excused by any stretch of the imagination, but given our like table position and how we're playing and blah blah blah, you can almost kind of okay, I see why maybe you're kicking off like this, but I think at the end of the day, some of his challenges are just maybe a toe across the line that's just a bit too much.
Well, there's like tactical fouls. To be cynical about it, there's fouls that you commit because it's the lesser of two evils at that moment. Totally. You don't want to hurt the guy, but you take that card because you're like, okay, well,
you pull the guy's jersey or
exactly. Yeah. But then there's endangering the other player, and that's where it crosses the line. And there's many moments where it feels like he's no longer even thinking of the player's, you know, long term health. He just goes in for it.
Well, and speaking of tactical fouls, I actually just want to pull up. I looked at some of the stats for this game. Harrisburg committed 17 fouls to our 5.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's no insignificant difference. Sometimes, I don't know. Yeah, I'd like
the one that went a man down.
I'd like to see maybe a bit more of that. Like you, like Josh, you were saying tactical fouls. I think maybe there was a certain level of, I don't know. I know smartness is not a word, but
certain level of smartness. I think you invent a new word on like every show.
Well, you know, but
awareness, a certain amount of awareness.
Yeah,
of,
yeah, you know, and about how kind of gnarly you need to be, and yeah. I think at times maybe we don't have that in our game, and to see, you know, a team, Harrisburg gives out 17 fouls, they get one yellow card. You know, I mean that's. I don't want to say that's impressive, but I mean, that's, you're kind of, you know, as now if you give away a foul at the edge of your own 18 and they end up whipping a ball in and it's a goal, then obviously it's not a great position, but obviously, you know, it's,
I don't think you're going to see that with this team, at least under Brandt. Brandt kind of, he has a tight ship. I think I forget who I was talking to, but they told me he had a whole Navy season where there wasn't a single yellow card given on his
team.
Wow. Yeah. Tight ship.
I mean,
he does not take that.
That's
amazing. That in mind, do you think Danny's back next year? Do you think he's part of this team?
I think so. I honestly do. I think, one, he is passionate enough and he cares enough that he will fight to be on the team. He has said in the past that once he's done playing for Pittsburgh, he's probably not going to stay in pros. I mean, he's like, this is the team I want to end with. So he's said that before. So I thought that was pretty impressive, you know. But does that mean that he's, you know, going to call it quits after the season because they don't call him back? We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, the connection's obviously there. I mean, it's even after that conversation we just had about him, you know, we obviously, like, I still kind of have a nice little special place in my heart for Danny Earls, and it sounds like at least it's at least somewhat reciprocal from his end. So yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to see him go. I'm not entirely convinced to see, I don't know, because we've kind of alluded to this before. You know, the USL is a completely different beast than Navy or anything like that, and the Riverhounds is, and the players. I mean, everyone, it's a completely different kind of world. And so, I don't know. I would like to see, I would certainly like to see him stick around, and I have a feeling he probably will.
I hope so.
Yeah, I honestly, I don't know where to stand, because, you know, we were talking a little bit off air, and it's clear that the passion is there, and you don't see that from all of the players. You know, I think the two that really come to mind right off the bat that it sort of like radiates from them is Earls and Herzog in my mind. And there are other players that show it, but those are the two like poster boys, I think, for Pittsburgh passion. And just
I think Hunt's in there as well. Yeah, like when, so after the games, usually the players come over to the Steel Army and, you know, they do the whole handshake there, clap thing. And you could tell on some of their faces, like some of them, that they feel the wins and they feel the losses. And the other ones just look like, you know, well, that sucks, we lost, or, you know, cool, we got the win. And they're smiling. But you can tell the ones that are really excited about those moments and the ones that are just like, cool, we got it.
Yeah, I think there's a picture, we'll probably end up making it the cover for this show, of the selfie that was taken after the Wilmington game that Hunt got in on along with Nico.
Now, are you going to use the picture that is the picture of the selfie, or are you going to use the selfie itself?
I don't know.
A little bit of selfie inception here going
on.
Yeah,
I don't know if I have the actual selfie. I think I have the picture of the selfie being taken.
I believe the Steel Army posted on their Twitter account. You could probably find it there.
I'll have to go check that out. Yeah.
It just made me laugh because I saw that picture first, and then like I was scrolling through the Hound stuff, and I see a picture of the selfie being taken. Yeah. I was like, oh, that's kind of funny.
So let's leave this game on this. If the Keystone Derby wasn't up for grabs, how would you rate this performance? Would you say it was a good performance, average performance, or a poor performance from the Hounds?
We went in there, and we stole a point, and I think that should always be kind of the goal when it comes to away matches. You want the win, but if you can get out there with a point, that's a victory as well. But against your rival, against, you know, especially when they came into our house and got 3 points, I felt like a win was kind of the goal here. And the fact that we didn't get that win, it's hard to be satisfied even without the Keystone Cup on the line.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I would like to say a draw is kind of minimum. I thought it was very, yeah, it was a very kind of average, you know, we didn't play poorly. I didn't think we played great. And so, you know, in that sense, I mean, I'm looking at the league table right now. I really wish the USL put like numbers next to this.
I think they're 13th at the time of this game. I believe they were in 13th place.
Right now they're 6 points off of a playoff spot.
Okay.
Which is a decent amount. They're 6 points behind OCB. But the draw, I would say, is average kind of expectation. Like I said, not great, not poor. Given the context of the season, yeah, a point in this performance is probably okay. But I'm trying to take this game out of context and just kind of look at it of, I don't know, my personal expectations of how I want to see, you know, a Pittsburgh soccer team play.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about that a little bit here after the break, and we'll get into, you know, what are the last couple things that we want to see this team play for as we round out this season with only 5 games left. So the Hounds did not win the Keystone Derby Cup. It goes to Harrisburg, and who knows what's going to happen next year in terms of who's going to be involved. There's a lot of talk of including Bethlehem, which I think would be a good move, make it more competitive. But yeah, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about that.
We'd love to hear from you. Find us on Twitter at Mongols, on Facebook at Mongols, and email us at howl@mongols.com. Any questions, comments, or reactions read on air could win you your own Riverhounds jersey. Thanks!
All right, so, and we're back. So the Hounds have a game coming up this weekend against OCB. The game is this Saturday, September 3rd, in Florida. OCB are currently sitting in that final playoff spot, but of interest is that their last 4 games have been a bit of a downward spiral for them. They lost 5-1 to Red Bulls 2, lost 4-0 to Charlotte Independence. They drew 1-1 to Richmond, and then turned around and lost 1-0 to Richmond after that. So in order to stay in that playoff spot, they're looking at this game and thinking they're going to need all 3 points. They currently have a 6-point cushion for that last playoff spot, where basically Harrisburg, Bethlehem, and Wilmington all have 26 points. But aside from us, they still need to play TFC2, FC Cincy. I think they still have to play Bethlehem and Wilmington. So this is a game that I'm sure they've circled on the calendar as one that they're going to have to get 3 points out of this. How do you guys think this game shakes out? You know, we only have 5 games left to the season. There's really nothing to play for other than, you know, not being in the bottom of the table. So, Kev, what do you think?
I don't know. I really want to beat OCB, if only for the fact, I think the first time we played them, it was at Highmark. And I remember I kind of had that game circled in my head thinking, this is the game where we really kick on. And I thought it was a really big opportunity for us. I've never let that go. This entire season, subconsciously or consciously, I don't know. OCB has always been in my head about a team that I really want to beat more than like any other team, oddly. It's weird.
As far as, do you have something against the color purple?
No. Like,
what?
Maybe I have something against
just Mickey Mouse in general.
Orlando. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not a big. I don't know. I mean, you know, we just talked about it's 4 points from 2 games. 7 points from 4 games. We're starting to see something out of the Riverhounds. I don't know if this shakes out. I mean, because I didn't predict another 4-1 win against Wilmington, that's for sure. I really don't know what to think about this. I'm hoping. I feel like every time I say that I'm hoping, you know, the opposition's lack of form when they come up to play against us is in our favor. Feels like most of the time it just gets them angry and they end up playing better against us. I don't know what to expect with this.
I think it's gonna be a rough game. I really do. I mean, they have a lot to play for, and well, we don't. And whenever that happens, I feel like that's when it doesn't look good for Pittsburgh, I don't think. And this is one of the games. It is a two side. So like every time we play against an MLS team two. I feel like we have to win it because you know, your original team playing against a reserve side. And so it feels like you have to win those games just to, out of pride alone.
I agree.
And especially Orlando City's two team, because they used to be in USL not even long ago. So it's like they were the top of the league, and now we're playing their scrubs. And it's like, guys, you got to beat those guys. Yeah. So I do understand the, I don't know, not the anger, but the passion to beat them. But yeah, they're playing for something, and we're currently just playing to not be the bottom of the table. So it's going to be hard to find that resolve to show up at their house and get it done.
My only rebuttal to that, Josh, I'll quickly cut in here, is when has more than, I don't know, maybe one or two games, but how often does a Riverhounds game go as you think it will? Like, I don't think I've been able to predict a single result this season. When I think we're going to win, we lose. When I think we're going to lose, we're going to win.
Now that I think about that, it used to begin every, or the ending of every episode was pretty much you guys predicting the score for the next game.
We just stopped.
When's the last time you guys did? I'll say, there's a reason why that's no longer on the show.
I think I might have gotten one right towards the beginning of the season, and it was a draw.
We were really keeping score at the beginning, too. We were like, oh,
we were. I had it on the site.
The
yeah. Not anymore. maybe we'll resurrect it next year when it isn't as depressing, hopefully.
Depressing.
Hopefully. Yeah.
Hopefully. Yeah, I really don't know what to expect from this game. I mean, I think it's... It reminds me a lot of, like, the last week of school, you know? Like, finals are over. Like, you're not really working for anything. You know you're going to go in and they're going to play movies.
Then how come it doesn't feel good, Mike?
No, you just failed all your finals and you know that you're going to have to repeat the next year.
Summer school.
Here we go. Yeah. That's more like it.
Yeah, so it's more like summer school. So you're thinking to yourself, okay, you know, what's this last week for? And, you know, I think that you're going to have some of the players that, the Earls, the Herzogs, the Hunts, that are going to come out and say, no, you know, we're playing regardless. We got five games left. We're going to finish this out. And you're going to have other players that, I don't want to say are going to drag the team down, but, like, if they're not playing to their full potential.
What do you want to see? I mean, for example, do you want to see certain players get more time on the pitch? Do you want to see things get changed? Last five games, we don't have the cup anymore. What do you guys want to see out of these?
I think I would like to see something different than what we've seen thus far. I think some acknowledgement that, like, okay, you know, playoffs aren't happening. We're not winning any hardware. Let's start seriously preparing for next season. So let's start trying some different things. Let's start Walsh in games. Let's start different formations.
I want to see Walsh.
Yeah, let's try some different formations that we think we're actually going to do and see how they play out and start seeing some players that if we don't think that, you know, I don't know. I'm just throwing Earls out there, but if we don't think we're going to see Earls, then start them on the bench and let somebody else play in that position and just give them minutes so that hopefully we get them a jump start next season. Now, the next five games, I mean, it's OCB, Charlotte Independence, Cincy, Bethlehem, and then Cincy. So they're not cakewalk games, but
no,
they're not going to be cakewalk games next season either. So I'd like to see some acknowledgement that we can work forward towards something else rather than just keep doing what we've been doing and have it not working.
I do think there's a way to approach these games where you do get passion out of the team, and that is kind of making it known that these games are your tryouts for next season.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to prove to the coach that this is why you're on the team, that you have a reason to stay, that he should sign you back on, because most of these guys, their contracts are up every year, so like they're playing to stay on the team. And it's also an opportunity to get Walsh out there to show him, you know, what it's like to play in the USL. You got some hard teams coming up, so it's actually kind of good because you get to play him against, you know, the best in our conference. So that's kind of what you want to do, is just see how they do and if they show up, and let them know that if they don't show up for these games, then there's not a reason for them to be on the team next season.
I think, yeah, I mean, as much as I just said I want to see Walsh, and you guys are both agreeing with that, I don't, the main concern for me is I just want to see some amount of momentum at the end of the season that we could potentially carry into the start of next season. If that means getting new players on the pitch, if that means trying out different formations, fine. I'm happy with that. If that means sticking with something that has been, I don't know, somewhat working over these past four games and sticking with a somewhat of a similar lineup, fine. I'm fine with that. I want to see if we can carry any amount of momentum at the end of the season and the next season. I think that's going to be the most important thing for me.
But that does mean, though, you still have to put Walsh on, though.
Yeah, I agree.
He is signed for a 3-year contract. He is going to be on the team. They didn't pay the money they paid for him, however much that would be, and sign him for 3 years, have him ride the bench. So since he is definitely going to be on the starting lineup for the foreseeable future for the Hounds, you need to get him out there as soon as possible, get him game time, get him fit for next season.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because Nick Thompson isn't the answer for us at center forward. You know, it's there's a position there to be filled. I think Herzog kind of has that number 10 role kind of locked down, and so that's definitely a position I would be happy to see experimented with for sure in these last five games.
Well, and Josh, to your point about the whole passion thing, you know, obviously Brandt is a passionate guy, and I think he wants to see that out of his players. So if you have players that I'm going to guess that it's being made known in the locker room that if you roll over in any of these games, like, that's it. Like, we don't want you part of this from the coaching side.
Do you think he's passionate, or do you think he's more discipline-oriented? Like, when he comes in the locker room, do you think he's preaching the passion, or do you think he's preaching the discipline?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we have an answer to that. Can we have an answer to that? I don't know.
I don't think we know him well enough yet. Yeah. We haven't seen him enough.
Josh, something I've, from the stories that you've told, it's nice to hear that, I don't know if it's him initiating this, but how he kind of brings the team over to you guys after like the game and you guys kind of have that interaction. I don't know if that's a usual thing. I don't know how often that happens. I mean, but for me, at least that's not a negative sign by any stretch of the imagination.
It's definitely something that used to be a guarantee that the team would come over. It was actually kind of before Stefan. It was before the losing season began this season. It used to be pretty much every single game, win or loss, the whole team would come over. And then it kind of went away a little bit with Stefan. And after Stefan's left, it came back. So I don't know if it's really him or if it's just, them recognizing they had to get back to the way it was before to try to get back into the groove of it. But it's hard to tell.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and Richard made the point in one of his posts that we want Coach Brandt back next season regardless. Like, it doesn't benefit anybody to bring in a whole nother coach and do this all over again next year. Like, we want to see him succeed.
So, you can only rebuild for so long.
Exactly.
You have to, if you're constantly rebuilding, you're not building anything.
Exactly. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens over these next five games. We'll obviously be here to talk about them. And
that was
we'll
deep, Josh. If you're constantly rebuilding, you're not building anything. I feel like that was.
I thought it was kind of silly sounding. I was like, probably should have said, no, duh. But yeah.
Deep. Kevin.
Thanks for.
Kevin's gonna put that on a cat poster and hang it on his wall.
Crocheting it right now.
Yeah, that's right.
Cross-stitching. There we go. That sounds bad.
All right. Well, I think that's pretty much it for this week. Do you guys have anything else you want to talk about as it relates to the Hounds?
Not particularly.
No, we've pretty much covered it.
All right. So, yeah, the Hounds, get 4 points over two games. Let's see if we can pick up a few more points here to close out the season and see where it gets us from there. But otherwise, that does it for us. For Kevin, Josh, I am Mike. Thanks everybody for hanging with us, and we'll talk to you very, very soon.
Cheers.
Later.